And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Friday, October 16th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF, Melody.
Yes, it is. And it seems like Gold thought that it was TGIF and decided to go home early, too. Gold today, some pressure, down $10, but holding that $1,900 level in the New York spot price aftermarket. Silver was down 16 pennies at $24.27. Platinum, $868. Palladium was down $33 at $2,366. The USDX today was weaker, down 0.08 at 93.71. Crude oil was up 21 at 40.75. The paper markets today, I don't even think we should bother with the paper markets anymore until after the election. The Dow was up 125 at 28,620. The NASDAQ was down 40 at 11,671. And the S&P basically unchanged at 3,483. 10-year yield, 0.74%. And let's see. You know, London, I think we're going to talk a little bit about Brexit. Or at least I saw a headline today showing that Boris Johnson has pretty much warned everybody, don't expect a deal done before the expiration. Prepare, I think was the word he used, prepare. So both of them were up overnight based on, I guess, that good news. You know, it's just, yeah. What's good is what's bad is good, and what's good is bad, I guess. It's been going on for a long time, but so that's pretty much it in the marketplace today. We're going to talk a little bit about the consumer sentiment. That did tick up a little bit in early October to a seven-month high. Of course, everybody is looking towards the improved economic outlook, though confidence remained well below the pre-pandemic levels. Then this is the University of Michigan's preliminary sentiment index for October, advanced to 81.2 from the final reading in September of 80.4. And let's see, it was actually at the index was actually at 101 in February, and that was near the highest since 2004. While the results indicate pessimism about the future has diminished a bit, views of buying conditions for durable goods worsened in the survey, pointing to slightly less appetite for big-ticket purchases ahead this holiday shopping season, Dave.
Well, slowing employment growth, a resurgence in infections, and the absence of additional federal relief payments prompted consumers to become more concerned about current economic conditions. So says Richard Curtin, anyway. He's a director of the Michigan survey, who added those concerns were largely offset by continued small gains in economic prospects for the year ahead. Now, the Michigan report also showed that consumer inflation expectations remained relatively stable. Consumers anticipated price rising 2.7% in the year ahead. That's about the same, slightly higher than the 2.6 in September, while longer-term inflation expectations fell to 2.4%, and that's the lowest since March. Now, again, this preliminary survey covers responses received through the middle of the month. The final report for October will be issued on the 30th.
Mm-hmm. Do we have anything in there about the budget gap today?
The budget gap, yes.
The budget gap, yeah. How about that? We'll talk about it a little later on then, but I saw where it tripled.
Mm. Yep.
to a record $3.1 trillion. I guess it really doesn't matter, but I think there's that. That's maybe one of the reasons that they can't agree on the stimulus. Who knows? But, you know, the IMF this week, I think we talked a little bit about this also either yesterday or earlier, but the IMF this week confronted the sobering view that the long-term impact pandemic on 6 months after the shutdown, much of the world, they said that even though it might not be as bad as what they thought, it's still pretty bad. You know, that hasn't changed. And both the IMF fund managing director, Kristalina Georgieva, pretty much in consensus with Mnuchin, that we talked about yesterday, said that she warned that policymakers must not prematurely end support to these markets and to these economies. And that's pretty much the same thing as Mnuchin said, that he warned the world, you cannot stop the stimulus because we're not in that place yet to where they can. Unprecedented central bank actions and $12 trillion of fiscal support help stave off a deeper collapse, leaving the global economy poised to rebound to pre-pandemic output next year on strong growth forecast for China. The IMF forecast of 4.4% global contraction for this year, the deepest since the Great Depression. And policy responses around the world have propelled debt to record levels that most governments haven't yet begun to fully confront. In the U.S. and other advanced economies, that means a couple of years of acute pain. And that's even with the fiscal stimulus and monetary policy easing the blow, Dave.
And suffering, Melody, just may last longer in Latin America, the IMF believes, where it sees average per capita income remaining below 2015 levels for another 5 years. Fiscal monetary steps, it believes, have helped cushion the world from an even uglier outcome, as you mentioned, but the end game can't come until there's a medical fix. Now, Georgieva said the other day, after her meeting with a group of 20 finance ministers and central bankers, until we have a durable exit from the health crisis, we will be faced with difficulties, uncertainty, and uneven recovery. Now, China's apparent taming of the virus, and I say apparent because I think we need a much longer period to judge the effectiveness of any nation's actions. But in any event, China's has safeguarded its economy for the time being and made it just about the IMF's only bright spot. Overall, the fund sees global output by the end of next year being about 0.6%, six tenths of a percent higher than at the end of 2019 before the pandemic, but that's driven almost entirely by China. Most other nations, including the U.S., will need to wait until at least 2022, it believes, to see a fuller recovery to pre-pandemic levels. China will boost its share of global growth to about 28% in 2025, almost triple that of the U.S. That little teddy bear, Melody, just cuddling in everybody's lap while all that juice inside its mouth by its fangs are just getting ready to open up and gobble everybody down. Now, what does the sleeping tiger
The sleeping tiger, bear.
60%, yeah. 60% of bilateral debt, though, is held by that country. Is owed to that country by the world's poorest economies. And a lot of that's due to be paid back this year. So Beijing's participation in global debt relief, certainly a key factor in the recovery prospects for these debt and crisis-stricken nations.
Yeah, but what does that do to China, though? You know, that's why their pressure is on for, you know, everybody coming to the rescue of all these, you know, poorer nations and so forth, where they owe so much to China. What's that really going to happen to China? I mean, you just don't You just don't wipe away that amount of debt and have no, you know, aftertaste in your mouth. I mean, something's got to happen. You know, yeah. So.
Well, if it thinks it can get a further edge up on the U.S. and the West, it may decide that, as you know, a strategic maneuver, perhaps forgiving some of that debt buys some goodwill. I mean, its Belt and Road Initiative is still going on. We haven't heard much about that recently, but during these last 8 months, but it's still happening. So they, you know, looking for additional influence. Forgiving debt has been sort of I won't call it necessarily an easy way, because that would suggest it's without consequence, but it's been a way that the larger, the lenders of the world have bought some goodwill. So we'll see.
Yep, absolutely. Well, you know, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, about states saw their tax revenues drop by about $31 billion or 6%. And this really, you know, you might think, folks, you know, well, we heard this. No, I think you need to hear, you know, I personally believe it's good to hear stories more, and you know, because oftentimes, sometimes it's important. And it's important that these states, that people understand how these states' revenue, and what do you think they're going, what do you think these states are going to be doing when they see their tax revenue drop by $31 billion or 6% just from March through August? I mean, that's huge. You know, and the scale of the drop appears smaller than expected, but it's still huge. And this isn't over yet. It also comes after several states have reported that their revenue didn't decline as much as anticipated despite business shutdowns and increased unemployment. In August, when much of the country was reopening, state revenue climbed about 1.1% from a year earlier. So, you know, it's, you know, these states are going to have a hard time, and something has to get cut. Someone's not going to get paid, Dave.
Well, I know. You know, if you look at it in a pure employment level sense, I mean, if you assume, for example, that, I mean, that an average state government salary, say $50,000, then you add another 50% in benefits that move with pay, so say 75,000. I mean, that equates to 413,000 jobs at that $31 billion. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not to suggest that, you know, that's, it's going to result in that kind of employment loss, because it hasn't, and it certainly won't. But it shows you the potential that is out there that could be added to those unemployment rolls. We're talking more than usual about unemployment today. We'll be talking about our blog on the third segment of the program. That's about that, in terms of the actual unemployment numbers and how they relate to inequality. In any event, you know, these analysts say that states' financial outlooks will likely worsen, particularly if there's no stimulus deal and high unemployment reduces tax bills next year. So, you know, income tax deadlines were pushed back to July. This is today, actually, is the day to file your extensions. And that certainly could have resulted in some revenues being processed later than normal. Personal income tax collections, which rose 4% in August, and oh, excuse me, did I? No, I'm there. Excuse me. In some cases, were supported by backlogged unemployment insurance benefits that were subject to withholding tax. In any event, between March and August, that's what, a 5 month period, three, yeah, tax revenues fell over 6% annually, annualized, with 36 states reporting declines over that period and just 8 states reporting growth. The Urban Institute says that due to the shifting and timing of tax receipts this past year, it's crucial to view these August year-over-year revenue gains and fiscal year-to-date data with caution.
Well, you know, this story is repeated off and on, and it was just recently that President Trump, National Security Advisor, and President Trump had made the announcement that they were going to reduce the Afghan military presence. And he said today that the administration has set a timeline for bringing U.S. service members home from Afghanistan, but they actually moved the goalpost into early next year. I thought it was supposed to be by Christmas.
Yes.
Speaking to a virtual audience of elites at the Aspen Institute, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien explained that the president's promise to bring U.S. troops home from endless wars in the Middle East was in the works. So it's about 2,500 service members by early 2021. O'Brien added that the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, was fully on board with the policy. And that's good news.
Indeed. Yeah, it's 19 years going on there, Melody, costing U.S. taxpayers an estimated $193 billion, according to the Pentagon, although that figure seems woefully low.
It does for that long a time.
Wars in,
Yes.
yeah, in, yeah, the wars in Afghanistan or Iraq and Syria together have cost over $1.6 trillion. That's since September 11th, 2001.
I hear the music. We're heading into a break. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And let's go ahead and we already talked about consumer sentiment. Picked up. Oh, see what I did. Oops. Okay, moving right along. You know, this is just a little inside joke between Dave and me. But you know, yesterday we talked about the roughly 900,000 Americans had applied for first-time unemployment benefits last week, and that's the highest number since mid-August. And the second weekly increase in a row. Jefferies economists Thomas Simon and Annetta Markowska said that we suspect that the continued inaction in D.C. on a new round of stimulus is contributing to weakness. And he says it's a fair bet that this increase in claims is concentrated in states where COVID cases are high and rising rapidly. So what about that, Dave?
Well, it seems to be the talk of everybody this week, Melody, that, I mean, just everyone has something to say about whatever numbers are being released and talked about, not the least of which is in Washington. Now, it's interesting that the number of Americans who are receiving benefits from the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Plan, a program for the long-term jobless, has risen by more than 10,000% since April and included almost 3 million people as of September 26th. Now, that's this PEUC, different than the PUA that provided the extra $600 a week for the traditional unemployed and also the self-employed and independent contractors. This program, the PEUC, provides an additional 13 weeks of benefits after unemployed Americans have exhausted their traditional 26 weeks of unemployment. That was part of the CARES Act as well. And guess what, Melody? We're now hitting the six-month anniversary of the spike in jobless claims that occurred over the spring that, as we'll recall, took unemployment to historic highs. During the week ending September 26, 818,000 more people enrolled in the PEUC program, while 803,000 came off the rolls of continued traditional unemployment. And that suggests that difference, that the major reason we've seen continuing claims fall so sharply over the last couple of weeks is due to benefits expiring rather than people finding jobs. So we can't rule out further increases in jobless claims. That's, I guess, the moral of that story. And again, I'll talk more about unemployment in our third segment.
Well, you know, everyone was sort of expecting the two big to fail banks see their revenue fall. And Dave, after all their complaining about, oh, how chronically low the interest rates would affect their bottom line, Well, here came their third quarter earnings reports. All your too big to fails, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, you all know who they are. All saw trading revenue jump more than 20% in the third quarter.
Jeez.
Morgan Stanley's earnings report yesterday showed profits jumped 25% from a year earlier. Oh, woe is me for these little old bankers. And that follows the second quarter's record for Modern Wall Street's trading and deal-making units. Even after lackluster headline earnings from Bank of America and the WOFO, Wells Fargo, the five biggest U.S. investment banks, hey, they're on pace to rake in $100 billion in trading revenue this year.
Obscene! I mean, they've already generated almost $84 billion. That's more than any full year since 2010. The finance sector's current earnings decline of 10.5% is less than half the 23% decline expected before the bank started reporting last week. But the big guys do seem to remain unloved on the stock market. No hugs for the weary there. State Street's financial sector ETF is down almost 20% year to date, and its bank specific ETF called KBE is down 30%. And even after the earnings results on Wednesday, which give the devil its due, were pretty doggone good, Goldman gave back all of its stock gains plus some yesterday. Well, I guess all those bank CEOs, Melody, the senior managers and traders and their families will just have to suffer when it comes time for their next round of six-figure bonuses. Oh, pity the banks.
Oh, pity. The culprits, the creators of all of our problems. Well, I mentioned earlier in the program about how we just posted the largest fiscal deficit on record, the world's largest economy. The federal government's budget shortfall officially more than tripled to $3.1 trillion in the government's fiscal year that ended September 30th. That swells the national debt to exceed the size of the economy after lawmakers opened the spending spigots, but they would have done it some other way because that was the only way to keep the system going. But this was from the pandemic. The year-end deficit as a share of the economy surged to 16%. Wow. And this is the largest since 1945. At the end of the fiscal crisis in 2009, the ratio was close to 10% before slowly narrowing through 2015. Federal spending jumped 47% to $6.6 trillion in fiscal 2020.
I'm laughing, not crying, if anyone is wondering.
47%. With the economy officially tumbling into recession in February, government revenue declined 1.2% from a year earlier. Receipts from individual and corporate income taxes fell this year compared to last. Actions by the White House and Congress to limit the economic damage from the pandemic quickly ushered in an era of even larger deficits and borrowing while sending fiscal hawks really into hibernation. Dave, I don't know what baffles me more or shocks me more. The amount it has increased, 47%, or to the fact that it doesn't seem important enough for anybody to talk about.
Modern monetary theory rocks, doesn't it, Melody?
It does. Ignore it and it'll go away.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
Well, come on. I mean, what are you complaining about? I mean, all these low interest rates aren't net interest payments are actually down. We're actually down. And they're down again this year. What's everyone complaining about?
Yeah, I know.
But we got the Federal Reserve. They're taking all the heat off of our elected folks.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to worry about another 1.8, 2.2 trillion or whatever the heck it'll be after November 3rd. Interest rates near zero, probably for the next 5 years. Jeez. And come on, our boy, Jerome, he was saying that providing too much stimulus won't be a problem. Now's not the time to be worried about deficits, Melody. Yeah, let people worry about that later. His successor, your and my successors, so on and so on and so on. I mean, CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, let's you know, remind everybody their latest long-term budget outlook calls for federal debt held by the public to be almost 200% of GDP by 2050, twice the size of our economy. You know, certainly a lot of that having to do with baby boomers retiring and the additional demands on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid as respects to, you know, additional nursing home stays. So, but then you have, we'll call them well-intentioned watchdogs. Maya McGinnis, who's president of the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, with her Captain Obvious hat on, says Democrats and Republicans need to come together and start planning how they will make the tough decisions needed to save Social Security and Medicare and stop our massive debt from spiraling out of control once the crisis is over and the economy has recovered. Melody, I'm just afraid that when that time comes, we'll already be planning for the next crisis.
I know, really. It's the next one, I don't think we're ever going to get out of this one. And I think this one does have an end, but I don't know. It's, I mean, you can look at some good news. There was the retail sales. They rose 1.9%, a little bit faster pace than most expected in September, 1.9. You know, it seems that the economy is somewhat healthy, but it just, I mean, the economists were expecting to increase 0.7%. So, I don't know, excluding autos, the gain amounted to 1.5%, which also was better than the 0.4% estimate. Clothing and accessories led the advances, rising by 11%, while sporting goods, music, and books jumped 5.5%. Electronics and appliances was the only major sector that was negative, dropping 1.6 from the August levels. And what I believe, electronics and appliances, from what I understand, there's no inventory out there. You can't find things to buy. So, yeah, you're going to see that sector drop only because there isn't anything to buy. From what I was told at one of the appliance stores, that they have the demand, but it's all pent up because they can't get anything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, so it's not, you can't buy what you want. You buy what they have. And because they can't order anything. So you're basically cleaning up the inventories that they have. Consumers drive about two-thirds of our economy. We know this. The economists expect that number to turn around when the third quarter growth is announced. The Atlantic Fed's tracker is pointing to a 35% increase. That would be more than double any single quarter growth going back to at least 1947. Well, and so on and so on.
Well, beyond that, concerns are rising that the fourth quarter could see another marked slowdown. particularly if infections continue rising. And, you know, no question that this holiday shopping season will be a key for what kind of momentum our country sees as the calendar turns the pages into 2021. Personal savings rate has peaked at almost 34% in April, remained at 14% in August. Drop in electronic sales could be seen as one harbinger of a slowdown. The September 2020 total also represents a decline of 6.4% from the pace of a year ago. Oh, yai, yai. Just so much uncertainty and mixed signals out there, Melody. What's a consumer to do?
I know. Spend, don't save. Actually, you should buy gold. Convert those fiat dollars into real money. You know, because there's going to be plenty of things to buy at reasonable prices. You know, pennies on the dollar that you'll be able to buy in the future. So, this is what you want to do. Convert those fiat dollars into real money. You know, I'm going to switch gears here. We're almost heading into the next break. There was a missile that was fired into the sky on Friday on Turkey's Black Sea coast, where the military was expected to test its Russian-made S-400 defense systems, drawing a strong warning from the U.S. State Department. Now, a video of the incident showed a narrow column of smoke headed high into the blue sky. In recent days, Turkey had issued notices restricting airspace and waters off the coastal area of allow firing tests. So, State Department spokesperson said the U.S. has expressed to the most senior levels of the Turkish government that the acquisition of Russian military systems, such as the S-400, is acceptable. So, I don't know. She, you know, she said that the Washington had been clear on the expectation that the system should not be operationalized, and had reiterated warnings about the potential serious consequences for security relations if Turkey activates the system. So, what now?
Well, we'll condemn in the strongest terms this missile test as being incompatible with Turkey's responsibilities as a NATO ally, and strategic partner.
I hear the music. We're heading into the next break, and Ruby just reminded me to tell you all that we'll be back. So please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the third segment of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody, who's taking the third segment to work on the ever-growing pile of paperwork with clients. So we wish her a good weekend. Just a couple of new shorts here before we get into some more discussion about unemployment. Looks like another volatile week ahead may be in store for all of the markets, as cases of the pandemic are rising in the U.S. and Europe, and Democrats and Republicans here in the States remain at odds over new stimulus aid. Nancy Pelosi told her House Democratic colleagues that there are still big differences with the White House over a number of components of a bill, even as a separate agreement nears, apparently, on a COVID testing program. And as you probably have heard, the Social Security Administration announced that the cost of living adjustment for Social Security recipients in 2021 will be 1.3%. Hey, about $20 increasing to your pockets. That's, of course, before taking into account any increase in Medicare Part B premium. Two members of the House, Peter DeFazio of Oregon, John Larson of Connecticut, have proposed a bill there to raise that increase to 3%. They're calling it an emergency increase. DeFazio said due to the pandemic, seniors are facing additional financial burdens in order to stay safe. So we'll be following that and updating you as time goes on here. Probably see some more discussion on that again in the lame duck session after Congress reconvenes from the November 3rd elections. Anyway, as I had mentioned, our latest blog, What a Rush of Gold and Silver, is out as we speak. It's about true unemployment, actual unemployment, and how it all relates to the growing inequality in our country. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and our American Survival newsletter at dgscoins.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page, at DGS Coins. That's the @ DGS Coins, all one word. Now, listeners who follow Financial Survival know that one of Melody's and my pet peeves is inaccurate government reporting on things like economic indicators. Prime example, for decades, we've seen mounting evidence of such imprecision every single month in the U.S. Labor Department's jobless figures. And it's only gotten worse since the pandemic kicked into high gear earlier this year. Here's a brief illustration. The department's Bureau of Labor Statistics reported recently that the nation's so-called headline jobless rate in September was 7.9%. Now, the headline rate is just what it says. It's the official government rate most commonly reported by the news media and thus repeated most often by TV and news outlets, politicians and institutions. Now, as noted, the headline rate is the BLS's official U3 unemployment rate. It reflects the total number of unemployed people as a percent of the civilian labor force. Felix Salmon of Axios reports that the official definition of unemployment can be traced back to the 1870s, when Massachusetts statistician Carol Wright diagnosed what he called industrial hypochondria. By restricting the unemployed label to men who, quote, really want employment, Felix argues that Wright minimized the unemployment figure. Well, as it turns out, Wright went on to found the Bureau of Labor Statistics and brought his undercounted unemployment definition with him. And to this day, to be officially counted as unemployed, you need to be earning no money at all. But you need to be actively looking for work. The Wright dilemma, ladies and gentlemen, shows the biggest shortcoming of the headline rate, namely that discouraged and marginally attached workers and those employed part-time aren't included in the reported U3 figure. Now, discouraged workers are people who aren't working but who want and are available for work and had looked for a job sometime in the prior 12 months. The BLS doesn't count them as unemployed because they hadn't looked for work in the prior 4 weeks, for the specific reason that they believed no jobs were available to them. On the other hand, the marginally attached are a group that includes discouraged workers. Criteria for being marginally attached are the same for discouraged workers, with the exception that any reason can be cited for the lack of a job search in the prior 4 weeks. Persons employed part-time for economic reasons are those working less than 35 hours a week who want to work full-time, are available to do so, and gave an economic reason for working part-time. For example, their hours had been cut back or they just weren't able to find a full-time job. Those people are sometimes referred to as involuntary part-time workers. So discouraged, marginally attached, and part-time workers show up in the BLS's U6 unemployment rate, which the BLS says was 12.8% in September. Now, however, a new report from the Ludwig Institute for Shared Economic Prosperity suggests that the actual unemployment rate in the U.S. is 26.1%. The Institute's jobless rate is based on what I think is the more realistic notion that a person who's looking for a full-time job that pays a living wage, but who can't find one, is unemployed. Pretty much that simple. The Institute, by the way, pegs a living wage at $20,000 a year before taxes. What this revelation shows is what we've been saying here on this program for years, that the official unemployment rate is artificially depressed by excluding people who are earning only a few dollars a week or less. If you measure the unemployed as anybody over 16 years old who isn't earning a living wage, the rate rises even further to 54.6%. This is the Ludwig Institute. For Black Americans, it's 59.2%. In January, when the official headline unemployment rate was 3.6%, the true rate was 7 times higher, 23.4%. And the recession only made it worse. Only 46% of white Americans over the age of 16 and 41% of Black Americans now have a full-time job paying more than $20,000 a year. Think about that, $20,000 based on a 35-hour work week. It's about 1,820 hours per year. That's the equivalent of about $11 an hour. It's actually less than $10 an hour for a 40-hour work week, or 2,080 hours, per year. John Williams, who founded ShadowStats.com, believes September's actual jobless rate was 26.9%. Certainly similar to, but actually higher than Ludwig's. Williams' figure is based on his approach that reflects current unemployment reporting methodology that's been adjusted for his estimate of long-term, I should say, of long-term discouraged workers who were actually defined out of official governmental existence in 1994. Not included, but trust me, they exist, and there are a lot of them. Now, employment levels are just 1% lower for top wage earners than their pre-pandemic level, compared to nearly 20% lower for those making less than $20 an hour. That's according to a separate analysis by an econ professor by the name of John Friedman. Friedman found that America's billionaires have seen their wealth rise by a combined $851 billion since the middle of March, when the S&P turned around from its low, largely because of the rise, in equities. Most Americans have missed out on that boon because more than 80% of stocks are held by the top 10% of households in the U.S. And, you know, if there's anyone who ought to be talking about economic inequality, it's probably Jerome Powell, a man who is Fed chair, has highlighted the issue and called on the Fed to reduce it through policy. But asked about how the Fed's policies have impacted wealth and income inequality in the U.S. during last week's virtual meeting of the National Association for Business Economics, Mr. Powell demurred. Now, some believe it was similar to the Fed's May policy meeting when Powell claimed that the Fed absolutely had not increased wealth inequality in the U.S. But economist Peter Atwater of William & Mary College believes that Powell came off as disingenuous. Atwater added, "You can't talk about the critical importance of asset prices and the wealth effect on the one hand, and then say that Fed actions didn't contribute to inequality. The Fed explicitly boosted asset values, and the consequence has been to unduly favor the wealthy by a big margin." While market participants may view him as a hero, the widening wealth and income gap during a pandemic will more likely be Powell's enduring legacy among most Americans. Certainly not what he had intended or hoped for. Nevertheless, as someone once said, you reap what you sow. Now, even if you're not ready to accept the Ludwig Institute's or ShadowStats.com's numbers, or if you simply tend to have more faith in the government's reported numbers, remember, forget about the U3 unemployment rate. Block it out of your mind. It's nearly irrelevant. Look instead for the BLS's U6 unemployment figures every month, even though there's almost certainly still underreported, perhaps by as much as one half. They're certainly much more accurate and relevant than U3. Okay, let's... I guess, you know, this is sort of going... across seas, but staying here all at the same time. China, their first direct bond sale in the U.S., at least this year, has received high demand. And that's spurring expectations that more high-grade Chinese borrowers will tap the world's largest bond market in spite of U.S. threats. The recent China sale raised $6 billion. But it garnered almost $30 billion in bids. And that certainly helped the Chinese Ministry of Finance sell the debt at a lower cost compared with a similar offering last year. China's economic recovery from the early effects of the pandemic also encouraged a strong demand. One Hong Kong debt analyst said the demand for Chinese U.S. dollar bond sets the tone for more high-grade dollar bond issuances from the Chinese corporate and supranational entities throughout the Asia-Pacific region. Such issuers, he added, have been waiting to tap this market, and the inherent demand will boost confidence. Now, by offering part of the issue as what are called 144A notes, China opened its bond sale to a broader set of U.S. institutional powers without the regulatory burden of a public offering, getting their cake and eating it too to a certain extent. U.S.-based investors will get almost one-fifth of this recent bond offering. It's about $1.2 trillion. With high-grade Chinese debt offering higher spreads, arrangers expect issuers to ignore threats by U.S. authorities to ban mainline entities from the nation's capital markets. On sale included 3, 5, 10, and 30-year maturities with coupon rates of 0.4, 0.55, 1.2, and 2.25%, respectively. Foreign ownership now exceeds 9% of all Chinese bond holdings. Ladies and gentlemen, that will do it for today's program. Melody and I will be back on Monday. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks a lot for listening to Financial Survival. Have a good weekend and be safe out there. Bye-bye. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.